been another long day out with the hounds, thrashing them across the field in pursuit of the uneatable. Ah, who's this? Come to see me in my North Yorkshire retreat. Why? It's my old friends from Linux Voice and from Linux Lifestyle. Hey, Mike.
Hey, I've just noticed here in your lovely abode, Andrew, that you've still got my copy of the Johann Sebastian Bach biography, but it's upside down. What are you trying to say?
I'm actually a secret fan of the Romantic composer.
Oh, damn you. I'm taking this book back.
Yeah, it works well in my my leather-bound bookshelf in the drawing room here.
I noticed that War and Peace is upside down as well, so yeah. There's definitely something going on here.
I must speak to the staff about that. You can't get them up here, though, sadly.
Head first, Python is the right way up. I think that says a lot about the way your life has gone in the last 10 years.
Yes, welcome everyone to the Linux Voice podcast, series 2, episode, what is it we're on now?
Eight. The time flies.
The fortnights fly by.
Yes.
I'm Andrew Gregory.
By the way, Pink Pony. I just had to mention that because I've got the official Linux Voice IRC channel open here, which is on Freenode, #LinuxVoice, and everybody's demanding that I say Pink Pony, so I'm Mike Saunders, and I've played Pink Pony.
I'm Ben Everard, and I've never played Pink Ponies.
Really?
Yeah.
See if you can get it working on a Raspberry Pi. In fact, you could probably make some sort of robotic Pink Pony.
What did we say about making this podcast snappier than the last one?
Oh, yeah. Sorry about that.
And I'm Graham Morrison.
And in this awesome podcast, we're going to use the word awesome many more times than is necessary.
Yeah, the reverse of that challenge.
There will be news, there'll be a voice of the masses, there'll be a neuron to vocalise.
A really cool voice of your neurons, this issue.
There'll be finds of the fortnight.
Yep.
All brought together in a
royal hunt of a podcast.
Yes. there'll be all sorts of things: stuffed quails, ocelots' spleens, otters' noses.
Oh yes,
all
badgers' feet.
All ethically and organically sourced. And if you like the sound of that, you can subscribe to a paper version or a PDF version, and that is called Linux Voice. It's a magazine that we make.
It's got 114 pages.
It has, and just to avoid any overload, we're going to put in a subtle selling message to that halfway through.
Great.
Yeah, I think so. That works, doesn't it?
Yes, good idea.
Pass the cigars, Mike. I'm ready for the new section.
Right, the news this fortnight. It's been a relatively quiet fortnight as far as Linux news goes.
Yeah. Because everybody's still reeling after Heartbleed, aren't they?
Yeah, well, let's start with the Heartbleed related news then. The OpenSSL, the bit of software responsible for the blood. The bloodshed.
Put the fox head down.
The software responsible for the the software responsible for the bug has been forked to LibreSSL.
Yeah,
this is developed by the OpenBSD Foundation, which just confuses the name further.
Yeah, it's really interesting. They've someone's put up a blog called, I think it's OpenSSL Valhalla Rampage, and it's basically it's basically showing a lot of the commit logs of and comments being used by OpenBSD developers as they rip apart OpenSSL, and it's absolutely terrifying. I mean, you know, we saw just how big this Heartbleed bug was. But yeah, as these guys, and OpenBSD guys are very, very good with security, as they go through the code and rip out stuff and take the mickey out of the code and laugh at dreadful things, it's like, you know, the internet is so dependent on this obviously bug-ridden piece of software.
The OpenBSD developers aren't well known for their subtlety and tact, are they?
But I like that, you know. Yeah. There's no attempt at marketing this, and they're just like, right, this is rubbish. Why does this exist? These coders are rubbish, and they're just going ahead and doing it. So, yeah.
So the big question is, how has OpenSSL survived for so long without at least a cursory glance by someone who knew what a horrendous? It's difficult to say something without swearing.
Well, it's interesting that I think this was another thing we put on the list of news items. Is a bunch of companies like. I don't know, there's Microsoft's involved and Google, and they've all got together now and said they're going to work with the Linux Foundation to help improve OpenSSL. And it's like, well, yeah, now that you realize right. the codes. Because a bit of a strange situation has come up. This LibreSSL fork being developed by the OpenBSD team is being made for OpenBSD. And they've said that if we get enough donations and support, then we will make it portable for the platforms. That's a bit like the way OpenSSH is made. It's made primarily for OpenBSD, but then they make a portable version with not quite as much awesome security. So a lot of people, Linux users, are running around saying, oh, we want it to work with Linux straight off the bat. But OpenBSD developers don't care. They just want to make the most secure operating system possible. So
there's also another twist to the tale, because in creating LibreSSL, they've dropped support for FIPS, which is like a corporate security tick box thing.
Yeah.
That a lot of people have said is completely and utterly pointless.
But you need it to get your software installed in government stuff.
Exactly, yeah. Whereas the people who have put in the money for OpenSSL will continue to support FIPS because it's necessary for various certifications.
Right.
The money they've put together isn't just for OpenSSL as well, it's for all critical infrastructure projects.
Right, yeah.
So hopefully they're going to not just focus on this one project, because there probably are other underfunded projects.
So you're talking about this big confederacy of companies that have put the money in?
Yes. With the Linux Foundation. Yes. Yeah.
So that's people like Microsoft?
I think they are.
Yeah, I think Google.
Actually check, but where's the news? So here's the Linux. So this is Amazon, Cisco, Dell, Facebook, Fujitsu, Google, IBM, Intel, Microsoft, NetApp, Rackspace, VMware join up with the Linux Foundation to form new initiative to support critical open source projects. It seems like a lot of companies scrambling together saying, OMG, we really need to fix some of these.
Is this connected to the OpenBSD guys?
No.
Right. No, it's a separate thing. Right, okay. OpenBSD is doing LibreSSL. All these companies are coming together to help fund development of OpenSSL and other stuff.
So there'll be two versions of basically the SSL layer.
Yes.
What could possibly go wrong?
Well, actually, that could be a better case, because potentially there will be vulnerabilities in the future, or there definitely will be vulnerabilities in the future. Hopefully, they'll only be in one over two at a time, so it'll affect fewer. So if there was a Heartbleed 2.0, and half of the websites are using LibreSSL and half are using OpenSSL,
I think that's all right. Yeah, that's better than having a monoculture in this sense. It's not competing. It's not duplication for duplication's sake, like the million LXD-based Ubuntu-based distros out there. But I think that having several SSL projects around being worked on is good.
I'm not sure I agree. When it comes down to security, isn't there a kind of a science to it? And there's a right way of doing things and there's a wrong way of doing things. And so wouldn't it just be better to have one thing that you know is secure? More eyes on the same bit of code, isn't that the mantra?
Well, yeah, but I know what you mean, but it turns out that there weren't that many eyes looking at this code. you've got a point there as well. If there were 50 different versions, they might all get out of hand, but I think having a couple to maybe spur each other on.
Yeah. More internet security related news. Internet Explorer. It's very good for criminals exploring your computer when it's connected to the internet.
Oh, you should be in marketing.
Microsoft not pay up for this bug.
There's been pretty terrible security bug in Internet Explorer that various security people, including US and UK governments, have said that you shouldn't be using IE until it's fixed.
Yeah.
But the twist in the tale is Microsoft said, well, we're not going to fix it for XP. So, if you're using Vista or later, you're all right, just upgrade.
What about our $5 million that we, as us taxpayers, have paid to Microsoft to keep XP going for another 6 months?
I think they just burned a copy of Firefox onto a DVD and put it in the post.
Although I'm no fan of Microsoft at all, you've got to feel for them, because they just want XP to go and die. It is so old now, and they did support it for a reasonably impressively long time, but a mess.
They should have created a new version of Windows that ran on equivalent hardware then.
True. Well, maybe there's like Windows 7 Embedded Edition or something.
They've got to provide something. I think it's unfair. Because there are going to be, the truth is there's still going to be lots of people that they're going to be vulnerable, and that is going to reflect on Microsoft.
Mm.
I'd have thought, yeah. You know, I'm only thinking of them.
Yeah. That's very kind of you, Graham. Yeah.
I mean, with open source software, you can do it. You know, somebody can do it if they wanted to. But you can't do that with Internet Explorer.
Maybe they can all move to React OS.
Yeah, yeah. And run Firefox.
You can still run Firefox on
Windows
XP.
Yeah. You can, yeah, and so get rid of it.
It's not the apocalypse.
Yeah.
It's just really bad PR.
It's like there are apparently still loads of businesses using IE6 on XP. I mean, that is like 2001 era technology.
That's really strange. So.
Yeah, well, there was something changed in the ActiveX thing that meant a lot of the old business stuff you couldn't directly just upgrade, and they never got around to migrating the software over.
Oh, such a great idea was ActiveX, wasn't it? Just arbitrary code running in your browser. Great.
Yeah.
I logged into our PyWik analytics thing, and I know this was a discovery of was it of yours, Ben, that the fourth or the third most popular browser for accessing linuxvoice.com is still Internet Explorer.
Is it?
It's all, well, I haven't looked for a while, but it used to be right on a par with Opera. Opera and IE was about the same.
It's ahead of Opera now.
Is
it's
it?
Substantially ahead of Opera.
Ah, that would be the slash dotters.
Yeah, all those people claiming to have never used Windows in 15 years, actually sitting there with their Windows 8 touchscreens.
Wow. I'm an old-school 70s Unix hacker.
Yeah.
Oh. Mom, can I use your laptop? So, yeah, if you're using Internet Explorer on Windows, best of luck and upgrade.
Yeah, if you like, you can buy a copy of our magazine and we'll help you to move over.
So, moving on from Windows to Ubuntu, as many people have done.
Hmm.
Ubuntu 12.04 has been released.
14.04.
Yes, 14.04. I said I'm still running 12.04. 14.04 has been released. This is the latest long-term support version, so it'll be supported for the next 5 years. It's what do we think? Has anyone used it?
Is it the trusty... What is a tahr?
Some sort of...
Did anyone find out?
It's an animal.
Okay, let's have a look. They are a... Tahrs are three species of large Asian ungulates related to the wild goat. So wasn't there a goat-based release before?
Was it a Quetzalcoatl kind of?
Oh, yeah.
Goatsy.
Goatsy goat.
Goatsy buntu. Yeah.
Register that domain right now.
I think you've been trolled, Mike.
I'm more intrigued by the next one, 14.10, that's going to be the Utopic Unicorn. I think that's a great name.
Yeah. We're just making time here because none of us actually used it that way.
I thought you were going to say because of Mir and because of the Unity 8.
Always judge a book by its cover.
Okay.
Yeah, so a lot of the things planned for this Ubuntu haven't happened, have they? There is no Mir.
Mir, yeah. Yeah, I mean, that makes sense because this is a long-term support release, so they're focused on stability. It looks sort of more evolutionary rather than revolutionary.
That's exactly what you want from a long-term support release, though, isn't it? It's stability is a feature.
Exactly, yeah.
Shocking, I haven't had the time to use it. I'm sorry.
I've got Ubuntu 14.04 up and running on my laptop.
Mm.
It's all right. It's what you'd expect from Ubuntu, really.
Yeah, you couldn't use the internet. But,
Well, yeah, I think it's been fixed now, but there was a slight issue where it didn't start Network Manager applet automatically, so you had to do that manually, which is a little bit annoying, but, you know, these things happen.
Yeah.
Which version of Ubuntu are you using?
14.04 Ubuntu on my laptop and still 12.04 on my desktop.
Right.
Keep meaning to get round to upgrading my desktop.
I did actually use one of the last betas for the touch desktop group test that's in Linux Voice 03.
Oh, yeah.
And while there wasn't that much new in it, Unity is feeling pretty functional. I did quite like it.
Functional? That's what they were going for?
Yeah.
That's all you want.
Yeah.
I really like Unity. I know I may be the only person, just me and Mark Shuttleworth. But I don't know. It's just kind of slotted into my way of working. And now I feel like I'm going back in time to the ye olden days when I use anything else.
Hmm. Have you got that advert in the mag from Canonical yet?
Not yet. I think they've also been very, very busy.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. Mark Shuttleworth's in Las Vegas this week.
I think that the design team are also in Vegas rather than designing an ad. They're off having a great time putting it all on red. Because they, like Mike, they've never watched Wesley Snipes.
True.
They don't know that you should always bet on black.
They just gambled a half-page ad in Linux voice on red. So it would be the Bellagio. Should we go for one final bit of Ubuntu news?
Why not?
Yeah, go on.
One final bit of Ubuntu news is that they've dropped Ubuntu for Android. So that fancy little thing where you slotted your phone into the watch it and you got your Unity desktop on your telly. That's gone.
Yeah, it's gone, and it just seemed to have been announced on a Launchpad bugs page.
I thought it was a fundamental part of the whole experience.
Convergence.
Well, convergence is still going ahead. It's now going ahead in Ubuntu phones rather than Android phones.
I can't really argue with that, to be honest. The idea of running an operating system on top of another operating system seemed a bit convoluted.
Well, lots of people do use Emacs, so that's the same thing, effectively.
Or VirtualBox. Yeah. As far as I'm aware, it's more of a Chroot type thing than a sort of virtualization type thing. But anyway, yeah, it's gone. It was a nice idea and it looked cool, but it never really took off. And then as soon as they started developing their own phones, it did just drop by the wayside.
Mm. Yeah, it's just sort of come hot on the heels of Canonical dropping some other things, hasn't it? You know, like Ubuntu 1 was closed recently. I think we talked about it in the last podcast.
And as we've said, Ubuntu for phones does look the bee's knees.
If they get it right, yeah. Then.
Yeah, it's been about a year since I've tried it. Another go.
Yeah, I should put it on my Nexus 7, actually. Ubuntu. You had it running on
Nexus. I had it running on my Nexus 7, yeah.
Hadn't they dropped support for Nexus devices?
Oh, they did, I think, as well. Yeah, the older Nexus 7, at least.
I think they dropped support for the Nexus 4 and Nexus... They hadn't released it for the Nexus 5, but I think... Well, they said they were reconsidering it, kind of meant that they were going to drop it. Yeah.
Did they put too much on red? and that's the news.
Good work, Ben.
Wow, top news.
And that means we've actually got through the news in about
20 minutes.
20 minutes.
So it's now time for Finds of the Fortnight, because then we can have a halfway reminder, maybe.
Yeah.
Hey.
Ooh. Shall I go first?
Oh, you look really eager to go first.
I am.
It's great when Ben goes first.
This is absolutely nothing to do with Linux, but it was such a shocking find that I have to bring it to the forefront. After 32 years on this planet, I've discovered that I've been tying my shoes the wrong way. I'll go and get a shoe so I can demonstrate in
to our listeners.
Yeah.
I'll just put some Benny Hill music on.
Okay, Ben's back with
nice shoes.
Yeah.
What is it you've trodden in there?
I don't know, but it's going to be all over the inside of your car. Essentially, the tie of a shoe lace should be a slip reef knot. And as any Boy Scout knows, the way you tie a reef knot is right over left and under, left over right and under, which means you have to change the direction you do the under and over.
Mm-hmm.
So you can then make the loop, you have to go over backwards. And I was going over forwards.
Have you calculated how many seconds in your life you've wasted because of this?
Well, it's still seconds wasted retying my shoelaces. And the way, there's two ways you can tell the difference. One is if you take the loops and you pull them through, so not undoing it but tying it wrong, you should end up with a reef knot. But
are you following this, Graham?
Not especially.
Hang on, I'll just undo it and retie.
So it's a good job our listeners have got a visual aid.
Yeah.
Have we still got the echoey sound effect that we use for
And if you tie it wrong, if you pull two sides of your shoe apart, the knot will turn vertically rather than horizontally like it should. And it becomes much less secure like this, and it can be slipped open, as you can see.
How did you actually make it through Africa then with your shoes not being tied correctly?
Who knows? Good luck, I guess.
I think I must be doing mine correctly, only because there's many times the loops have come out and I've ended up with a knot.
Well, a tight reef knot should be, because if you do it the wrong way, you'll end up with a granny knot when it comes out the other way. Right. And a tight granny knot is harder to undo than a tight reef knot, because a reef knot you can sort of wiggle and they'll come undone.
You sound like you understand this, Andrew. So you're not experts between you.
No, I was in Scouts.
So was I, but it didn't help me.
What? It helped you through Africa and through Wales.
That's true, both Africa and Wales, but with my shoes tied incorrectly.
See, in Scouts you don't learn any practical stuff about the real world. It's just all knots.
Well, I can
day after day knots.
I can tie you a bowline if you want, but I've just been tying my shoelaces wrong all these years.
Okay. Maybe there's an animated GIF of this on the internet that we can use embed.
I actually learned it from a TED video.
Really?
Yeah. someone gave a TED talk on tying shoes properly.
How long was this talk?
About 6 minutes.
Oh, okay.
Well, they've got a limit of 10 minutes on TED talks.
Oh, I see.
10 or 15 or something like that.
Maybe you can make a Raspberry Pi robot that ties laces.
Yeah. And in general, I don't really like the TED talks because I think they're just too condensed to have any real meaning.
Yeah.
You sort of squash something really important down. You know, if something's the whole slogan, ideas worth sharing. If something's worth sharing, something's that important, it's worth giving more than a really brief talk on.
Yeah.
Spend a little time getting to actually understand it.
But now you'll be looking for all sorts of other like tiny bits of your life. Like, oh, have I been doing that? You know,
the way
I eat with a fork. Can I shave a millisecond off?
I'm pretty sure that's it. Now my life is perfect.
Excellent.
That was the last slight chink that was wrong with me. I am in fact now perfect.
Have you now reached enlightenment?
Yeah,
you are floating in the clouds.
As soon as I did it right, I just started hovering off the ground. A light shone down. And that's my find of the fortnight.
Probably the best, yeah.
We should all just go home, really. There's nothing to beat that.
Yeah, all I've been doing is using Linux. So,
you must have found loads of things about Linux, though.
I've actually started playing NetHack recently because I'd like to write an article about it. I'm saying looking at my colleagues, but depends if anybody's interested. But yeah, it's the old ASCII command line dungeon exploring game from the 80s and onwards. But I found out that you can actually telnet to nethack.alt.org and watch other people playing NetHack. So you can just choose games in progress and you see how quickly people play, because they know the inside ins and outs of the game. It's a massively deep and complicated and rich game. So. Yeah, that was pretty good. My second find of the fortnight is I went to the Firefox OS website today, as you do. I can't remember why.
Oh, we should have mentioned that Firefox 29 was released in the news, shouldn't we?
That's true. That has been released with a new
looks
interface.
Nice, yeah.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to hear people's feedback about that interface because it's quite a big change.
Yeah, yeah.
But anyway, yeah, I went to the Firefox OS site and their slogan is, Firefox OS gives you the power to live every moment to its fullest.
Awesome.
That's very strange. I mean, I'm all up for giving open source projects a bit of marketing, but that sounds like some sort of...
That sounds like it may be better in German. Because there's a single word for it.
It's just strange, yeah.
I kind of resent the idea that you can't live every moment to its fullest without a phone.
Yeah, without this specific phone.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure it's wonderful and everything, but...
yeah, yeah.
You know. Well, we know that it's more important to learn to tie your shoelaces properly. That's the thing that...
Yeah.
You don't need human communication. And the third find that I have is something quite a few people might know, but it's the -D option to open SSH. So that's -D, which basically... lets you root. It sets up your SSH connections as a kind of proxy server, as a tunnel. So I wanted to watch the snooker on the BBC from the Free State of Bavaria. But of course, you can't do that in Germany. It says, no, not allowed. So I have a Raspberry Pi set up at my parents' place.
Does it say, no, not allowed? That is not allowed!
In all capitals. Yeah, so I've got a Raspberry Pi set up at my parents' place in England that I can just log into on the web. And I thought about setting up a VPN or something, or a proxy server for all this business, but I just found out I can set up an instant poor man's VPN just with the D flag to SSH. And those are my discoveries, finds.
I found some things as well.
Ooh.
I like those were nice finds, Mike.
Thanks. Yeah. That means a lot to me.
We could. I wanted to ask you more about NetHack, but I just know what's going
to
happen.
I just. Yeah. we'll need to get that echoey sound effect. Like, yeah. I overheard Mike and Ben in the snooker room today. They were. Just, I think the conversation was something like, "See that ampersand? That's a water demon."
Really? You want to watch out for those that killed Mike?
Yeah. Oh, I got that absolutely was the cigar smoke pulled. Getting in the way.
I'm just thinking how Stacey's going to illustrate this NetHack feature when I write it.
That'd look awesome. Yeah. Like an ampersand rendered in demonic fashion.
Yeah, with like arms waving out of it, and yeah,
that'd be cool. Yes. So my finds then. I found actually one of you three people.
Mm. Wasn't me.
Mike. I've come to regard as people who I've met. somebody posted on our IRC thing, somebody posted a link to islinuxaboutchoice.com. So you could go to islinuxaboutchoice.com and find out.
I thought that site used your cookies to decide for you. If you constantly go to Slackware, then it gives you one answer.
Anyway, that really tickled me, and I've just stolen it now as a find, which I didn't find. Oh well. My other find, I've got two more finds. It's quite a basic find, but we've been using a font called Roboto in our magazine and website, and it's used on Android phones, and it's now used on my Mint laptop because I went into the preferences and fiddled with it and installed the fonts, and now my laptop is corporate themed.
Wow. Yes. And that means screenshots you make for the magazine will also
are all in the right font.
Whoa.
Incroyable.
Consistency to the max.
When I print single labels for the single issues, I use the Roboto. Yeah. Font. Oh.
Nobody's mentioned that. We've sent out hundreds of issues, and
I mean, they don't get the Morrison handwriting.
No, the people who are missing DVDs get the Morrison handwriting.
So that's discovery one. That as well, we knew it already. Linux is infinitely themable and customizable, and that's just one tiny little meaningless way in which I've made my Linux more mine, which is nice. The other one is that I've been using a lot of LibreOffice lately, and I still hate spreadsheets.
In general,
just in general, they're awful. They're horrible. Just like numbers and stuff. That's why I
thought they were supposed to fix these problems, so you don't just have numbers.
No, the way to fix these problems is to get somebody else to do it for you.
That's true.
I remember when I was choosing my A levels back in the olden days, thinking I had no idea what I wanted to do, but I just didn't want it to be anything to do with adding up columns of numbers.
Welcome to your life.
I know, this is awful.
Spreadsheets do make adding columns of numbers quite easy.
Yeah, I suppose, but
I think as an invention, they're quite cool. I hate spreadsheets too. You know, there's no need for more, but they're quite, I think, whoever thought, I can't remember the name of the person who invented the spreadsheet.
But Mavis Beacon.
Wasn't she a typist?
She was.
Wasn't that a hill we drove past?
Well, we're all typists, aren't we? I type as well.
It was Dorothy Hodgkin.
There we go. Are you going to edit the Wikipedia page?
She used X-ray crystallography to determine the structure of a spreadsheet.
But look, if you're getting demoralised by spreadsheets, simply select a load of cells and create a nice 3D graph, and then look at it like, wow, this is pretty cool.
Can you imagine what a 3D graph of our VAT statement would look like?
Yeah, we could put it on the back cover of the magazine.
It'd be like the Misty Mountains.
Be like Mordor.
Whoa, that's an idea. You know that Joy Division album cover that's the sound file, which is like, is it the pulsar of a dying star or something? Yeah. We could do like a similar thing, but of our VAT return for our T-shirts.
We could just like wear it at Linux events so people would know how well we were doing. I'm sorry, guys. Have a beer. Or beers are on you.
That's my finds.
I'm writing an Android coding tutorial for this current issue. So I've been playing with Android Studio, which is really cool. It's a very cutting edge kind of IDE for developing Android apps by Google. I think it's IntelliJ's idea it's based on, but I haven't really done any Java programming for a while. But the IDE is really nice. It can add import commands for you, and it's really clever at spotting errors, and it's a really good environment to work in, and I feel quite positive about developing Android, which the last time I tried it, like 18 months ago, it was really difficult. So in fact, even though there are many words involved in the tutorial, it's pretty straightforward. I think most people can manage to do it. My second discovery, which is partially linked to the video that was on Slashdot a couple of weeks ago.
There was a video on Slashdot a couple of weeks ago.
I don't really want to. Thanks for all the kind comments on the Slashdot video. For everyone else, I've got this Twitter feed called at Avoid Comments, which if you subscribe to, it gives you a daily reminder every day that in case you were tempted, just don't read the comments. So some of the posts from Don't Read My Comments are, nobody on their deathbed ever said, I wish I'd spent more time reading the comments. It was the worst of times, Charles Dickens, if you'd read the internet comments. Two classic online blunders, never get into a LAN war in Asia. And never go to the comments section. it's basically a Twitter bot, because while the guy that set it up 18 months ago was inspired to create these things for about a year, he gave up. I think it kind of killed him creating these comments every day. So I think it's just on a constant loop. And then my final discovery is an open source version of Flux. Which is the tool that I...
Ah, yeah, you've been told about this.
Yeah. I've also been told by Hugh that he told me about it before I discovered Flux. So, I'm sorry, Hugh.
But did he tell you about that when you used to work for another company?
Yes,
so you might have erased
intellectual
it.
Property. I couldn't bring that discovery.
Yes,
so
that's true.
I've discovered it afresh. Thanks, Hugh, for reminding me. It's called Redshift. So it's a free software version of Flux, which is an app that changes the color temperature of your screen according to the time of day.
I was thinking of including it in FOSPix, but I'm not sure how to take a screenshot of it. Just be like,
you actually have to take one every hour.
Yeah, maybe I should then.
Can you put like an animated GIF in the digital version? Just gradually fade it in.
GIF, you say?
Here we go.
Yes, I do say, and I don't care who says otherwise.
Voice of the matter.
Do you say PNG or ping?
PNG.
Okay. Do you say gnome or gnome?
I alternate between the two.
Ooh.
Shrewsbury or Shrewsbury?
Shrewsbury.
Scone or scone?
Scone.
Scoon.
Scoon?
The stone of scoon.
Scone.
So for everyone that... For the... like one person that didn't listen to the podcast last fortnight, what is this Flux Redshift?
It's a small applet that changes the color temperature of your display. So in the middle of the day, white on your display looks like white, which is like, I don't quite know how color temperature is measured, but if you looked at the same white at 10 o'clock in the evening, then it changes to a different color temperature, so it looks more orangey in hue. The idea being that you don't go to bed having just looked at bright white sunlight. You go to bed having looked at dim, more muted colors, and basically a warmer temperature. So it's keying your brain into the time of the day, and it actually works. It really works. I'll show you later.
When it's time to go to bed, you'll show me.
You don't particularly notice it. I said it in the last podcast, but you don't really notice the colour shift changing. It's only when you then go back to a white screen that you think, oh, I've been looking at something that was subtly altered. And it isn't as glaring and as white and as loud and as shouty and as bleached as white. And it's really useful if you do happen to be doing coding at midnight or whatever, and then, you know, have a cocoa and go to bed. That's what it does.
Coding at midnight. That reminds me of a former presenter of a former podcast we used to work on.
That also reminds me that we still have that bottle of whiskey that Jake gave us.
Ah, yes.
Ah, JD Silver or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's all.
Bye, everyone.
That sounds like it's time for a halfway reminder.
Yes, go nuts.
Still to come, there's Voice of the Masses and Vocalise Your Neurons, but not necessarily in that order.
We do like to mix things up.
Before either of those things, I have to direct you all to go to shop.linuxvoice.com, where you can buy Linux Voice. The clue's really in the URL. It's a marvellous magazine made by us and our small but awesome band of awesome contributors who contribute awesome words. And this issue, next issue, the issue that goes on sale tomorrow as you're listening to this, features Mr. Alan Turing. It features what else does it have?
It's so full of things. I mean, okay, I know it's our magazine, but I mean the command line stuff that you did, Mike, is just phenomenal. It's just, you just realise how much power there is, and it's so easy to forget about it. And
yeah, I discovered a lot as well, writing it. Yeah,
there are so many things, in fact, that we didn't fit them on the contents page.
Oh yeah, sorry about that.
Surprise features. Just thumbing through the 114 pages, bigger than other magazines.
114 pages, which is 16 bigger than the industry standard for magazines about Linux.
So, it's time for Vocalise Your Neurons.
It's remarkably difficult. I mean, it's been a long time now.
What?
Since we had to say anything else other than these new things.
Yeah, and yet it's still... It shows about 5 years of...
the chip's still in your brain. Yeah.
You need the little thing there in the Matrix and then drop into your belly button and drags it out.
Well, I thought we were just going to have one neuron to vocalise this episode, but because I'm still live on the IRC channel, Yen Rabbit has just posted a neuron as of a few minutes ago. He says... When I first started using Linux way back in 2011, almost no one had heard of it. It must mean 2001. It has slowly been picking up traction, but at least in my part of the world, it still seemed relatively unknown. However, I recently started working as a consultant doing some research, and suddenly everyone recognizes Ubuntu. Seems like universities and NPOs are all seeing the light. Maybe this is old news, but I find it so exciting that Linux and open source are at the cutting edge of science. P.S. Love the podcasts. Keep up the good work. Thanks for that, Yen Rabbit, and awesome nickname, by the way. Now, this is a pretty awesome neuron I got about a week ago from Tris Deza, or Detzau, however you pronounce it, Tristian Deza. He says, "Dear Mike, I'm a 12-year-old Linux user. My dad is looking to upgrade to a new computer. It is an absolutely fine computer, apart from the fact that it runs the dreaded Windows 8. I keep telling him how unintuitive its UI is and keep telling him to switch to a user-friendly Linux distribution, e.g. Linux Mint. He will not listen to me and says that Linux is too hard to use and that he will never... pick it up, and that Windows 8 was built by Microsoft, a very good company, though I beg to differ. He also says that if he was to switch, he would be ditching a very good operating system and replacing it with something no one uses, and it would have no compatibility. Though as I have used Elementary OS and Peppermint 4 in the past, I know that compatibility is very good. I've tried everything to make him see the light, but he isn't having any of it." Right, thanks, Tristian. So, team, we have to convince Tristian's dad that Linux is easy to use, and... has great compatibility. I mean, we can say LibreOffice opens pretty much every file format now. You can throw at it. VLC Media Player opens every movie file, sound file. I don't think compatibility is a big issue in Linux.
So much of the use of a modern computer is just done in a web browser anyway.
Exactly.
You might as well use something that has no viruses.
Yes. And so... looking at moving to Windows 8, didn't you mention recently, Andrew, in Linux Voice, that you saw that Microsoft had to make a video explaining how to shut down Windows 8?
Yeah,
that is not an easy-to-use operating system. Linux Mint, Ubuntu, many Linux distributions are way easier and way more discoverable.
I remember when we got an early release, like a developer release of it, and back in a previous job, and we got... boot it up, try it out, and opened Internet Explorer. I haven't used it since like Internet Explorer 3 or something, so try it out. Oh, this is interesting. Let's try out something else. Ah, there's no close button. And I think you were there, Graham. I was like, Graham, how do you close it? He's like, I don't know. And we got some from PC Format, I think it was, and like, how do you close a thing in Windows 8? And they're like, I don't know. And it took about 15 minutes to work out how to close.
You pull the plug out.
Yeah.
Yeah, so given that we know so many people, and I've had this experience the few times I've sadly had to use Windows 8, but it's a right mess. So
it sounds to me that no kind of... He has to just use Linux. There needs to be some way to say, look, if it doesn't work out, then we'll do something stupid. But use Linux, you know, and you'll agree that it's the best possible way of using your computer. And if we happen to be wrong, then... I don't know. We'll think of something stupid to do.
Well, what I would suggest to Christian is to boot up his dad's computer with a live CD, a live version of, say, Mint Cinnamon or something, and just say, look, here it is. And the things are actually in the familiar places, unlike with Windows 8, where everything's been scrambled up. And look, it can open your documents and videos and stuff like that without any problems.
Yeah.
So good luck, Christian. Let us know how it gets on.
Excellent.
Well, that brings us to the voice of the masses, then.
Waiting for this.
Yeah, so the Raspberry Pi, we know it and love it. They've sold
1 billion.
One trillion billion. Single-handedly paying off the UK's trade deficit. Pretty soon there'll be a Welsh nationalist party demanding their Wales as pies. And we'll just have to redraw the border so that we get all of the pie revenue.
They'll start making it so you have to pay £5 to get out of Wales as well to get in.
Yeah, so until that day comes, we have the Raspberry Pi Model A and the Raspberry Pi Model B, fantastic as they are.
And the new module.
Yeah, the compute module.
Oh, yeah, of course. And the camera module, of course. Hmm. So we have all of this Raspberry Pi stuff, but what we don't have is a quad-core x86 super-duper all-singing, all-dancing credit card-sized board that costs 25 quid. So we more or less ask, should there be one of these things? is the relative lack of power holding the Raspberry Pi back when compared with its other similar competitors?
Yeah, and is it a good idea for the Pi Foundation to say, we're just going to stick with the current model for a while for compatibility's sake? Fair enough. Because
what they've said, isn't it?
That's what
Eben
Upton said, isn't it? He said he doesn't envisage another one for at least a year, and not even think about one for at least a year, because he said we don't want to abandon all our users. So I can understand that, but on the other hand, if there's so much better hardware out there doing a similar job.
But the thing, the really interesting thing that he said to back up that was that they'd only just begun. The story is they didn't envisage, I think, that the Raspberry Pi has become this kind of hacker-makery tool. Mm. It's about education. And so getting the Raspberry Pi out there was their first stage. And the second stage, which is perhaps more important, is to back it up with documentation, with foundation support of schools and other establishments, and to create networks of people that use the Raspberry Pi as part of a tool to educate people. And I think that is still only just beginning. It can still go much further without any changes to the hardware.
Yeah.
So that's kind of mission one.
Well, we've had a few responses on the old internets, which, unlike Slashdot, is a place free from bile and hatred, apart from when people are talking about Mike. Jess says, there already are more powerful devices. Very few people use them. They are more expensive and have yet to get a foothold. Power is not necessary to sell a product. Marketing starts it off. Public inertia sustains it, and an established ecosystem makes it persistent. And Shirley Coombs says, clues exist already. Raspberry Pi costs 100%, so 100% of an arbitrary figure. Sales 2 million. BeagleBone costs 30% more. Sales 100,000. Banana Pi cost about 50% more. No recent sales figures, and so on.
Ben, you know, you're a resident Raspberry Pi correspondent. Do you know anything about this Banana Pi? I went to their website and clicked the Buy Now button, and it didn't go anywhere.
Yeah, the website is... Well, there's two websites. One of them's a little better than the other.
Shouldn't we actually be promoting them?
well, first of all, there's BananaPi.org, which is a bit rubbish, and there's one from their make, which is Lima.
Yeah, I got confused by two sites as well.
But if you want to buy one, as far as I'm aware, the only place I've seen it is on AliExpress. The board itself is, I'm not sure I really like the Raspberry Pi form factor. The advantage of that form factor was really to get it done at a very low price for the initial Raspberry Pi, and that price point was really important because it allowed it to be something that you could just put in projects and risk breaking it.
Yeah.
That you could not worry about locking down because you didn't have to protect it too much. Hitting the price point is really important on that. And the more powerful device, you're using it for different things. You don't necessarily need to hit that lower price point. And the form factor, frankly, could be better. I haven't got on hold of a Banana Pi, and there's a couple of things that I would be concerned about. I mean, the first is you're talking about a dual-core chip powered off the same USB micro connector, and that's, anyone who's used Raspberry Pi for much will know that the power supply is a perennial problem.
Yes.
Whereas a lot of the more powerful boards use, a jack-style, I don't even know what the name is, a proper power supply. I'd be sceptical about the header pins working, just being drop-in compatible for the Raspberry Pi, and be able to use, all the modules and the software to use just a slot on the accessories.
Well, that's what they seem to claim, isn't it? That it is a drop-in replacement, just quite a lot more powerful. It looks almost identical to the Pi.
And they've got a version of Raspbian, or something that looks like Raspbian, working on it. I don't know. I'm not rushing out to buy one, to be honest.
I think it's better to be either 100% compatible or 100% incompatible, and be that clear. If it's like 98.4% compatible, then some of your Pi projects and Pi books and Pi tutorials like we did don't quite work.
I assume that the money you spend on a Banana Pi isn't going to any foundation or charitable cause.
To be honest, I doubt there's that much profit to be made on them at all. They're pretty, it's got a dual core A20 device, which on the face of it should be, notably more powerful than the Pi. It's two ARM V7 cores, so each core on its own would be noticeably faster than the Pi, and it's got two of them. So you're talking about quite a bit more power, but obviously the computing power of the Pi doesn't come purely from the CPU core. I mean, a significant chunk of it is in the GPU, and a lot of what Raspberry Pi Foundation have been doing is to allow more and more offloading onto the GPU. Mm. The GPU on the Banana Pi is probably slightly less powerful than the one on the Raspberry Pi. So then the acceleration there won't necessarily pay off in the same way. I don't know. I said a lot there and not really made a point.
That's like most of the internet.
Sorry, what did you say?
Add some hatred to us, Mike, and do the breakfast cereal thing. And then we're all sorted. Kittens. That sort of thing. Ray Woods says, the Raspberry Pi is a teaching tool first and foremost, and to that extent should not be altered in a way that the current stock are all superseded. Yes, backwards compatibility.
And I think I'm just talking about the refresh rate, because another thing that you're sort of looking at is it's been out about 2 years. So if you refresh it now, people will expect a Model D or whatever you want to call it in another 2 years' time. And that's enough to put off people buying. They'll think, Model, whatever you want to call it, Model 2. Has just come out, in a year's time, people are like, there'll be the Model 3 in a year's time. Might as well hang off to that.
Yeah, that's a law, isn't it? That's a law of, it's like Jevons paradox or Moore's law or something.
Oh, wasn't this to do with a computer maker in the 1980s? Was it the Atom, or
we've spent ages developing this computer, but just you wait, the next one's going to be amazing.
Yeah, Atari pretty much managed to kill itself doing this with the Jaguar. They brought out the Jaguar, and about 2 months later, they said, "Oh, we're working on Jaguar 2," and everyone's like, "I'm not going to buy a Jaguar then." Rubbish, Atari, absolutely rubbish. I'm glad you fell to bits. Anyway, that's just my bile and hatred.
And buried all their discs in the desert, apparently.
All their ET cartridges. Yeah. So it turned out that myth is true. Yeah, people have been talking about what. Obviously not me.
We speak of little else in North Yorkshire.
Yeah, people have been urban myth has come up a lot over the years, but it turns out, they really did bury millions of copies of ET. I do still have a copy, by the way.
You bought it?
No, because I would only be 3 years old. But
did you find our walk in the Mojave Desert?
Just strutting along. I don't know where it's from. My brother had a Atari 2600 or VCS, the wood panel one.
Nice. They had that on a local, what do you call them? Clubs for kids.
Yeah?
Yeah. They had Yeah, I quite liked it. Spider-Man was my favourite game.
I never played that. Did you play a lot of Asteroids? I know you're a big Asteroids fan.
Yeah, but I did. I much prefer the arcade dial.
I've actually seen Graham play original Asteroids on a Vector
machine
in the USA. That was a good moment in my life.
Mark C says, I'd pay £5 more for a physically larger device with a less compromised board layout. Sockets that line up and don't occupy all four sides, no protruding SD card. The P5 holes move to a sensible location and populated with a header. And then underneath that, Baron Axon says, and there will be also those who say, I would pay £5 more for a board that is more of a board for the size of a dongle. Yes, pointing out that there will always be somebody who says, I will pay £5 more for this, that, the other, and that everything is a compromise.
If all you want is the same basic power with a different layout, you could buy yourself a compute module and reroute it on a larger board.
Hmm. Well, if you want a more powerful Raspberry Pi, then you can get a sort of just a second-hand, cheapy Dell box for... You know, 50 quid off eBay.
With an RS-232.
And stick you know, Python on it, Scratch. It does all the right stuff.
Well, if what you're looking for is just a cheap, low-powered computer, sort of for the sort of under 100 quid mark, there are some decent ARM computers out there. I mean, there's the Udo that we reviewed a couple of issues ago. There's the Odroid, which I've actually got one in the post at the moment.
Ooh, interesting. I
haven't got it yet. There's the Matrix that we've looked at. And these, they're all decent devices, and they're all focused in different areas. None of them, though, is quite the same as a Raspberry Pi. They've each got, you know, different advantages and disadvantages.
Captain Mark says of the prospect of more new, more powerful Raspberry Pis, I hope not. I've just ordered my third one and could do without any more for now.
It happens like that. I'm thinking of getting a second one.
I need to get a second one because my first one is... somewhere else. I think it's at my urban residence.
Oh, I see.
In the industrial south of Yorkshire. Jess says there are already many more powerful devices. Very few people use them. They are more expensive and have yet to get a foothold. Power is not necessary to sell products. I've just read that one out. Sorry.
But it was so good.
But it was so good, and it was so indicative of all of the replies.
I think the fact that so many of us have got more than one says a lot about the Raspberry Pi's appeal. And I've got three, and I wouldn't have three if they weren't so cheap.
Yeah,
I wouldn't have three £50 PCs. You know, it's just the fact that you can do things with them.
What are you doing with yours?
Well, one of them is in the Brew Pi now, permanent.
Oh, of course, yeah.
Oh, awesome.
That was a great project in Linux Voice issue one.
I've got I made 36 pints of Belgian Strong Abbey beer.
Oh.
It's going to take like 6 weeks, but I've been having a bottle at the weekend. It's 8.5%, just to kind of see how the flavour is developing, and it's great. It's going to be really good. So good that I'm going to pretend there's none left when you guys next come down.
Yeah.
Well, I'll be down at the end of May.
No chance.
Similar to the way that my bank account being linked to the Linux Voice PayPal account makes it very, very easy to accidentally transfer large sums of money. I'm very sorry. I don't know how that happened. Must have typed into the wrong box. I was speaking to Peter Green of the Raspbian fame. Not fame exactly, but certainly he does a lot of the work behind Raspbian. And he was pretty clear that he prefers the BeagleBone for some projects, and that it's a lot more powerful. It's great to have more bang for your buck, maybe. But the thing that really is powering the Raspberry Pi now is the community.
The BeagleBone is an absolutely fantastic board for the configurability of the outputs, but it's just significantly more work to get things to...
And 100,000 units isn't bad. I mean, that's still a really successful product. No. So, yeah. And also, just thinking about it, it's the ubiquity of Raspberry Pi now that means you can buy it, and you can buy things that plug into it from any number of places. There are books about it. You know, it has become the standard that the Foundation wanted it to become.
There are books about the Raspberry Pi?
That's the worst book ever.
Someone's just given it a 1-star review on Amazon.
Oh, no.
Oh, what, really? Oh,
yeah. Did they leave a comment saying why? Yeah.
Something about it missing the subtleties of Python.
Oh, what a seller.
Seems like this person missed the subtleties of it being an introductory book.
You don't seem to be hovering off the ground anymore.
I'm going to be tying my shoelaces all wrong.
If it makes you feel better, and if it will make up for some of the rudeness that we wrote about it in the magazine, I'll go on to Amazon now and give it a like 3.5 star review.
If this is the sort of book you'd like, then you'll like it.
Is that the end of the podcast?
It's fairly close to the end.
It's about an hour long.
A natural pause.
It's healthy.
it's kicking. It's 10 to 6.
Oh. And you've got a nice casserole going there, Andrew, from the many animals you've hunted.
Yes, from the game that has foolishly strayed onto my estate, onto my land. Yes, there's a couple of peasant children in there. not much meat on them, but the flavour's good.
Excellent. So it's a low fat.
Yes, very low, very lean, very quite gamey.
Good work.
Yeah.
And I think you've got some beer in as well.
So. I've got some beer from Aldi.
Great, I'll have one of them.
Yeah. And a little bit
that's a step up from my Netto beer.
Yeah, but I think we should really go to a hostelry with a roaring fire.
You've got one of those on your estate as well.
Yeah. So. I sometimes let the cottage labourers drink there.
Ah, good one.
Right, so that's where we're off now.
Thanks, everybody.
Yeah.
See you soon.
See you in 2 weeks.
Bye.